Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and welcome to another episode of Voices for Excellence. I am your host, Dr. Michael Connor, CEO and founder of the Agile Evolutionary Group, and of course, the proud host for VFE. And today's guests, we are actually in deep with our Black Excellence series, and today's guest is someone that I look up to from an educational standpoint, business standpoint. I mean, we're going to get really, really deep into his business, his expanded businesses as well, and just the impact that he's having within the education ecosystem. And again, this month, Black History Month, we are highlighting Black excellence, and Dr. Hebert just exemplifies Black excellence all around. So we're going to cover all of the dimensions today. But today's guest, yes, is Dr. David Hebert. He is the CEO and founder, but just found out about something with solutions. So we're going to get a little bit into that. You know, that's to me, that's kind of like a flex move, as I always like to say. And then his other business endeavors as well. But, you know, when you think about, you know, entrepreneurs, I like to say Black entrepreneurs, Black business sectors within the education ecosystem, we try to reach this pinnacle that Dr. Hebert has. I mean, literally just what he has done throughout the education ecosystem, but that pinnacle, reaching that pinnacle from a Black entrepreneur standpoint, Black business standpoint, is something that we all want to emulate. And we're going to unpack his intellectual property and strategies that he have for us entrepreneurs, as well as startups in this sector, specifically focused on African-American males and females. But without any further ado, someone that I absolutely love, man. I saw him at NAPC, man. We had some internal jokes, and that's why I just love this good brother. Without further ado, Dr. David Hebert, what's going on, good brother, man?
What's going on, good brother? Yeah, man, I appreciate it, man. Thank you so much for that wonderful introduction. But I mean, you definitely have been and continue to do your thing. And you know, your space that you've carved out here, your reputation precedes you, your authenticity grounds you, man. So no, it's powerful to be a guest here. I appreciate it.
Nah, man, I appreciate you being on here, man. And like I said at the introduction, I said this to you in person. I want to be like you when I grow up, man. We're going to find out why. Me, as well as many other entrepreneurs, as well as CEOs of startups and companies, want to be like this good brother, man. I'm telling you, listen, no holds barred, man. You got to give us the secret sauce.
Man, you know, it's interesting. I've been talking about this more and more. So, you know, celebrating your series on Black excellence, it's interesting because my birthday is actually in February 20th, and I'll be 50. And I remember when I started this journey in concentric, I had no illusions or delusions of where it was going to be. It was really about the work. So similar to what you said, I stepped down in October after 16 years. Was it 16 years? Yeah, something like that. 16, 17 years of being the CEO and founder of Concentric. Still on the board, still deeply involved. It's in my heart. But, you know, as you can attest to, many entrepreneurs, whoever the case may be, you know, when you start something as a founder, it's not just a company. It's literally something that you've birthed and you've given so much to through the sacrifice, the long nights and long days, no vacations, whatever the case may be. So making that transition from CEO, running it day to day, and then the new endeavor is called Redemption. And Redemption is really just the next evolution, particularly as for me to give back going into my 50th year.
Absolutely. And to my audience, when you transition from CEO, founder to a board member, that means you made it. That means you made it.
it was absolutely necessary. You know, I watched a couple of things today, and, you know, as we're getting older, I used to be obviously the youngest in the room, and then you look up and you're not the youngest in the room anymore. And you're like, what happened? And this year, just this week, we lost two giants as far as transitioning in the NFL coaching realm. My native being from Baltimore, and John Harbaugh, but then Mike Tomlin, shout out to Kappa Alpha Psi fraternity. And, you know, 18 years and 19 years respectively, that's a long time to be in one place. It's a long time. And I thought about, like, how much tenacity and innovation that you need in this space. And when you talk about like this secret sauce, you know, I don't know if it's so much of a secret sauce as more of a hodgepodge, and you're trying to figure it out along as you figure it out along the way. And that's kind of what I've, you know, really experienced. And so, second, you know, shameless plug, our first book came out, One Door at a Time, came out in the summer. And I wrote that with my frat brother, as well as my chief of staff at the time, Michael Gary, and then Ivory Tolson, your frat brother, who I think is the modern day divorce. Shout out to Ivory and to Michael as well. And that was really talking about the story of Concentric. And then I have a book coming out on my birthday, February 20th, pre-sales coming out next week, called Concentricity. So what many people don't know is that concentricity, or they may know, concentricity is really my theory of action and change for education. Concentric just became the company name of it, but it's concentricity. And it's taken from directly from Alefe Asante in Afrocentricity. But that book is coming out. But then in August, about that secret sauce, someone really challenged me and said, can you write something about this? How do you build a Black business and how do you scale it? And I've spent some time and coming out with the book August called The Grind is Real, 10 Essential Principles for a Black Business to Scale. And it will outline the 10 principles. And it'll give examples. And it's not what most people think, right? Like one of the principles is the George Costanza effect. If you don't know that, you got to go back and watch Seinfeld. Another principle is there are no experts. So many people get on these platforms and they think they're experts. We don't know what the hell we're doing.
Right. You're right.
We're just trying to figure the joint out.
And Dr. Heber, and as you alluded to that, right, and stated to that, to my audience, please make sure, you know, February 20th is when Dr. Heber's book drop. And then in August, for all of the Black entrepreneurs, CEO, founders, startups, right, focused on Black businesses, please pick that up in August. But Dr. Heber, you know, so many people come up to me and they state like, wow, you know, Mike, you know, wow, I can't believe it, what you're doing and how you're building this and how you're doing that. But on the back end, Dr. Hebert, you're right. No vacations, 13, 14 hour days. You're up to 2, 3 in the morning. You're juggling like 5 or 6 things. So the output, the perception is immense success. You know, they see the end value of our work, but as they state, you know, the candle was burning at midnight, past 4 or 5 in the morning, sometimes 2, 3 hours of sleep that night, weekends, what was considered a weekend? All the days, Mondays and Saturdays, they still the same thing. So it's just Dr. Hebert, just the vitality, the work, the intentionality, the time spent, the adaptation, the various iterations that we go through within our business model, right? Measuring specific metrics, whether it be our ARRs, you know, annual recurring revenue, whether it be how can we now innovate, you know, with the TAM, you know, total annual market. I mean, these are things that educators, right? Superintendents, we're not educated in that because it's a whole business sector that we have to be able to underpin. And you said it, you know, it's kind of like you're learning by doing, you know, you're flying this plane and you're building it at the same time.
And I knew, you know, I gotta be transparent with everybody. Like, so I've always been a grinder. If you know my backstory, I've always grinded and wherever the case may be, whether it was back in the day with newspaper routes, and then newspaper routes kind of blended into me cutting grass, and my cutting grass clients turned into shoveling snow. And I was able to then one of the things I did, and I didn't know it, I was scaling a business then when I was 12 years old. I just didn't know that I was scaling a business. All I did was I took my VC money back then when I was 12, which was my paper route.
Yeah.
That was the steady. I was then able to
use. If I could interject one minute. Yeah. VC, yeah. Can you just explain, unpack what VC means and what that, the whole totality mindset of VC money?
Yeah, so VC is venture capitalist money, and it's really these, it's about organizations that seek, now some of them will call themselves social impact, some of them may not, whatever the case may be, but it's really like they're looking for organizations, businesses that they can come in, see profitability, whether it be through the revenue, whether it be through EBIT, depends upon like what metric they're really looking at, total contract value, and what you're trying to do, and this is what I tell everybody now, because people are asking me, how did you get VC money and you're a Black business? 1% of VC money goes to Black businesses, or 1.5%, or whatever the case may be, right? It's a very small percentage. And one of the things I said is that, well, I was very honest with them on the front end. I said, I don't know what EBITDA is. I don't know what OpEx is. I don't know what COGS are. I didn't know any of that. I was able to build a profitable business only because I was focused on the students and the results. The profit comes later on. It's similar to in athletics, that if you're worrying about MVPs and private accolades, it's one thing. But if you're focused on the team goal and winning the championship, everything else comes from it. And so I tell people, as they're interested in VC money or the profit, because they quickly want to get that. And I understand that. What I caution them is that you're going to give up something. And regardless of how socially and conscious minded VCs are, or some of the VCs are, they're in it for one reason, and that's to make money first and foremost, and then impact. Like, let's not get it confused. And I had a great VC partner, and the lead general partner there, amazing guy, very conscious guy, but he will even tell you that 20 years ago when he started it, he was profit driven. Now he's had a decent amount of success. And so he's able to see past just the profit momentarily. But at the end of the day, he has people that he's responsible for. He's investing people's money, right? So I was literally speaking to another CEO a couple of weeks ago, and they asked me, well, you know, can you help me? And I was like, do you want to keep control of your company? Because the minute you take a dollar, you're not in control of your company anymore.
Absolutely.
You got to know that. You're not the sole decision maker. Right. There's different fiduciary responsibilities that you have to be comfortable with, and you're going to have to learn how to do things differently. Yeah. So that's kind of the world of VC.
You know what, Dr. Heber, a lot of people, you know, don't really understand the granular context when VC money comes into a company. Right. You know, when now you have to be able to adopt a board. And, you know, you have to meet specific metrics, right? Your idea, your ideology around the solution, around the platform. Yes, it takes in consideration. But again, VC capitalists, they want to ensure that their voice is a part of the decision making, because, you know, they're bringing in their own money. But I want to focus on Concentric, because the work, Dr. Heber, that you have done, you know, across the country with Concentric has just been absolutely phenomenal. The totality of the impact and influence that you've had in the education sector with the work of Concentric. Now, how has your journey, because you have a unique journey of resilience to now this multi-million company that you have built, and now you're moving out of the CEO role. Okay, stop flexing, bro. For real, stop flexing to a board position. But one, right? What is the critical work of Concentric with regards to chronic absenteeism? You knocked over thousands of doors to get kids re-engaged back in the educational process. And two, you know, the work of Concentric, how were you able to establish those meaningful relationships to get families and students back into school?
No, I appreciate that. I think there's a couple things. One, because Concentric was a company name for my theory of change, it was always rooted in concentricity. So concentricity is putting students at the center of school phenomena. That's what it means. It's taken from Malefe Asante, Afrocentricity, who was my professor at Temple, which is placing African-Americans and Africans of the diaspora at the center of social phenomena. So it sounds logical that students should be placed at the center of the educational experience or this ecosystem, but it's not. Adults are, politics are, finances are, everything that literally impedes students getting what they need. And it's not a one size fit all. And therefore it goes back to what I was saying initially, is that the approach one door at a time is not just like a slogan. It's literally what we think and what we believe and what we've experienced for students to have success. Even when you're talking about one door at a time and multiple students in that one door, about resiliency, right? And how do you tailor make that support and that approach? That's undergirded by, we have cornerstones. So one of the things that is really important to me and has been since undergrad is my fraternity, Kappa Alpha Psi. And it whether it's Kappa, whether it's, I mean, I make jokes about iotas and sigmas and alphas and Qs and stuff like that. But and then even the sororities, but it's literally about the brotherhood. And so I took that brotherhood that I learned when I became a noop. And I always say this, and people will get it if they know it. All noops are Kappas. All Kappas aren't noops. And that's applicable to any fraternity, any sorority. And it doesn't mean about pledging and hazing and all that stuff. What it means is your singular commitment to give your wills and wishes to the wills and wishes of your line brothers, right? Or in whatever endeavor that you choose to do. So we have these cornerstones that we adopted. They're not perfect because human beings are imperfect, but it was really around authenticity, transparency, tenacity, professionalism, right? Like these are the things that kind of guided what we did. And that became those cornerstones that we led with. And even when we talk about it now, is that Concentric is not a program. So it's not something that's someone can say, okay, if you do A, then B, then C. Because humans are not like that. So what we say is we don't know. We have an approach, and the approach is adaptable to the school or the district that we go into. So that's what really bred it. And as you know, and this is coming out in the book, I think there's three R's that guide businesses: reputation, relationships, and results. The three R's. And they're interchangeable in the sense that there's not a hierarchy, there's not a chronology of it. It's literally relationships, reputation, and results. And those three are fluid at all times. And you really have to make sure, because when they come for you, because let's be really even more transparent. Black businesses are not given the same leeway for success or failures. Right. And that's not just with non-Blacks. That's even within our own ecosystem, our own community. Right. And you're going to fall down because you're going to make mistakes, particularly if you're not a trained business person. You're an educator. Right. You came up with a good idea to help students, but you don't know about EBITDA and COGS and profit margins or whatever the case may be. So you just don't know. Right. So even when I was a school leader, where I had one class in school finance, like one class, and you're managing millions of dollars as a principal. So that is kind of what I learned early on, and just let the results speak for themselves.
Absolutely.
And that's part of the secret sauce.
Dr. Hebert, and I was just about to say that, and to my audience, and Dr. Hebert, we use this as a professional learning tool, asynchronous, where they can go back and forth. You and to my audience who are specifically in this vertical, that are CEOs of companies, that are part of startups, that are looking to found companies. If you think about it, right, Dr. Hebert, the one thing I've learned is the association of the company's business model has to be rooted in educational research, right? And whatever, whether it be a service, whether it be a technological solution, AI, there has to be some research that's embedded in it. And I really loved how you explained how Concentric is rooted in the social phenomenon, right? And you referenced that, because I see a lot of companies, and even companies that CEOs have been coming up to me. I said that you have to make sure that either your services or your solution is rooted in some type of research or evidence-based practice that can be able to have the output, or the service or the solution with the output to have that impact on the students. The cornerstones to my audience, those are core principles, right? When we talk about the alignment of education research within a company, it has to be rooted in these core principles. And the core principles that Dr. Hebert was talking about were his cornerstones. I really love that: reputation, relationships, and R, the three R's. But Doc, completely 100% true. It's a new language for me, right? It was a new language that I had to learn. It was new acronyms, you know, as I was in some of these, you know, high-level business meetings, and, you know, they're throwing out, you know, what's the TCV of, you know, these five districts? And I'm saying to myself, okay, I think I'm going to see. And then they're like, my total contract value. Oh, okay, that's what that means. Profit margins, looking at that. Now, Doc, you're going to laugh at me when I say this, but when I first started, when I first started, people had to break down, this is like foundational for you, but it was new learning for me, the quarter cycles. Q1, we have to meet these specific targets by the end of Q1. What do you think?
I go back and forth with my team now, right? They'll be like, we're in the sales cycle. I'm like, what the hell is a sales cycle? Aren't you selling 365 anyway? Right. Well, the sales cycle has to be aligned to the budget cycle. But let me, you know, you touched on something that's really powerful. Right? So because it's this could be a professional learning series, right? So one of my 10 core principles is the George Costanza effect, right? And so iconic character in Seinfeld for some of the audience, and I'm mentioning Seinfeld during Black History Month, but follow me here. George says, you have got to do the opposite. That is what concentric in how I did it. That is what made us different. I did the opposite of what everybody else was doing and told me to do. Right? It's the opposite effect. And so, like, literally, I leaned into that. So my fiscal year was not aligned to anybody else's fiscal year. I did it differently, right? What I made sure is that we would lean, because the higher the heavier you are, the larger the profit margin has to be, which means the lower the service delivery. Right? I mean, it just makes sense. So, you know, the easiest way that I can explain it to people, when we're talking about OpEx, which is operating expenses, right? And COGS, right? Cost over goods sold, right? Like, I didn't know what the hell that was, right? But it's this simple. Do the people providing the service that generates the money, is there enough to cover the people that don't do that? That's it. The people and the things, whether it's overhead, technology, whatever the case may be. Then what happens is, when you get this unbalanced equation and you get too top heavy and less COGS and service delivery, then the customer gets less of the product or the service, right? But you have to charge just the same amount to take care of everybody that's not out there hunting.
Right, right, right. And please, to my audience, this is a 101. This is great, Dr. Hebert, because I learned this through trial and error, right? And when you talk about that key word, right, having a lean business, making sure, you know, you have to be able to have some type of forecasting with your profit margins. You have to keep it lean, keeping the services, the solutions, the products in this MVP state into my audience, minimal viable product, meaning this continuous adaptation and this ideation and iteration that you're going to change by the day. Dr. Hebert, I tell you, it was a crash course. And when people were like, oh yeah, Mike, you know, this and that, I'm like, man, listen, I had to go back to school on these basic 101s when we talk about operating expenses and COGS and everything. But Doc, I want to talk about your current book that's out right now, One Door at a Time, right? And it resonates with many educators worldwide, domestically. But first, can you unpack the core themes of the book for my educational stakeholders so that they can be able to take away and implement right away? And second, what are the best practices that my VFE listeners need to underscore universally to address the broad problems of practice that you outlined within your book, and also how to develop those authentic relationships that you have with your families and students?
So I'm going to start back to front. All right, so let's go with authenticity. The reason I think authenticity is so important, and we have to lead with this, is to establish relationships with students and the families. You first have to have an understanding and a relationship and understanding of yourself and be authentic with yourself. You can't go into someone else's home if you haven't at least recognized, you may be doing the work, or you may not have started the work yet, on yourself, right? If you have abandonment issues, if you have self-esteem issues, if you've been traumatized, what are those things? There's a lot of work, and this is still part of the training now when we onboard schools. And people say, well, we do home visits. Well, anyone can jump in and jump out there and do home visits. But there's a whole lot of work that you have to do on yourself before you are vulnerable enough to go into somebody else's homes. Like, you got to do that. You got to do your own heart work. You got to do your own investigation into what makes you tick and what really propels you out there. You know, one of the things I used to say is that when I first started Concentric, you know, Concentric was, I literally birthed it from nothing, from an idea and a theory of change. One of the questions I ask new entrepreneurs or current entrepreneurs who want to go bigger, I say, how much are you willing to give up and sacrifice? Like, stop BSing yourself that you think you're going to have a work-life balance. It doesn't exist.
Right. You're right.
Like, at the best, you can hope to have work-life harmony, but you're not going to have work-life balance, right? There's going to be a give and take. And I say this very transparently, is that I was a great provider, but I was a horrible father and a terrible husband and a terrible spouse. I was horrible. I wasn't emotionally available. I wasn't psychologically or emotionally present for my children. Now they got the things that they needed, the education, whatever the case may be, but what they needed was a father. And I was emotionally unavailable to give it to them because I didn't know how to turn it off. Right. And I had to be honest with myself with that. And now I'm still dealing with the remnants there. Right. Like, I made a conscious decision to build a company and it comes with a cost. So the question I ask young entrepreneurs is, what cost are you willing to pay? And no one can answer that for you. And you got to be gut honest with yourself, because that's going to dictate so many of your developmental steps, right? Number two, so the authenticity is to be authentic with yourself and transparent and vulnerable with yourself. Like, we have three things that we say now: authenticity, vulnerability, and empathy. Those three things should be guiding you before you knock on one door or before you do any work. Number two, some of the quote unquote best practices were the lessons learned and the failures of falling forward. Is don't chase the opportunity, right? Be very choosy with the organizations and the districts that you partner with, because we got to understand this, is that when your service or product fails, you will be blamed, even if the systems and the structures for implementation have nothing to do with you. They're going to blame the partner. I mean, that's what happens. Right? Like, I've gotten more, well, your home visits don't work. And I was literally on a call 2 weeks ago about this, and a district said, well, it didn't work. And I wouldn't do this, 15 years ago, like Mike, like when you started, right? When we started, because you need contracts, right? And yes, the customer is always right, but you can push back on the customer. And now, you know what I mean? Almost about to be 50. I'm just old and cranky. Like, I'm cantankerous. I know I'm cantankerous, right? Like, when I was just at NAPSE in Chicago, and I showed up in a camo Nike dry fit, right? And people were like, are you going to change? No, I'm old. Like, I've done this. I've earned this, right? Like, I'm just, you know, I had a scully on. I never would have been like that before. But what I was saying is that I told them, I was speaking to this district, and they said,
Dr. Hebert, hence, that's why we're trying to get to where you're at.
No, I'm just talking mad trash.
To my audience, I saw Doc there in Chicago at NAPSE. And I went up to Dr. Heber and I said, man, bro, I want to be like you when I grow up. That means that it is just oozing with success.
I'm just out here just talking reckless, man. So things I would have let pass before, I don't, right? And so, but I do, I try to do it as respectfully as possible. But the suit.
There we go.
That's my cat.
Right there.
That's my cat. Right there. Even my cat's black, man. I said to the district, they said, well, you know, Concentric, it doesn't work. I was like, oh, what do you mean? They were like, well, it didn't bump in, our chronic absenteeism didn't go down. I was like, okay, let's talk about this. What did you ask me to do? And they were like, knock on doors. I said, I knocked on every door that you asked me to knock on, every door. I said, I gave you the information why they weren't coming or why they were disengaged or what they were feeling. I said, it was on you to do something with that information. If you did not have the capacity to do something with the information, then that's a different conversation and that's a different service. And this goes to the three core services. So Concentric has always done home visits, mentoring, and tutoring. tutoring was a relatively new service that we got into because of post-pandemic, and we were doing in person. So what we focused in on from home visits, mentoring, and tutoring is we're going to knock on every door you ask us to knock on. We're going to bring the information back. But you got to be honest with yourself as a school or a district. Do you have the capacity to do something with the information? If not, that's when we put professional student advocates in the building, and they are responsible for checking up on those students and following up about any of those barriers that were identified. The tutoring just came because, I mean, you know this, post-pandemic, everybody was doing online tutoring. Well, that still didn't reach a whole large portion of the population. So all we did was do academic tutoring for those students that the online tutoring didn't work for. So those became three things. But I would encourage every entrepreneur, business, or whatever entity it may be, is for us, and I did not create this, I stole this, but is that I always ask them, what is your one key thing? What makes you so much different and better than everybody else? Your core service or product. And I'll start off because I don't have, but I do now. I have an iPhone now, but I didn't. I said, what is Apple's main product? And people were like, the watch or the MacBook. No, their number one product is the phone. Because if you have a phone, you're going to get the watch. You get the watch, you probably get the MacBook or whatever the case may be. For us, for Concentric, everything stems from home visits. It is what we do the best, right? Not the best out there, but it's what we are, that what we do. The minute you start, I believe, and Concentric was guilty of this, right? The minute that you start chasing other things, and it doesn't mean don't diversify, because you need diversification, you need multiple streams and stuff like that, but you can never lose sight of your one. And I learned that was reaffirmed when we going in before the pandemic, we were doing visits, and then we partnered with the district, one of your frat brothers. He was like, look, I need y'all not just to do visits, but can you do something? This is where we had professional student advocates doing case management. Then the pandemic hits and we shrink, but we never lost the one. So I remember this very clearly. Baltimore City Schools shut down in-person learning March 13th of 2020. Roger Shaw, who was the director of the Re-Engagement Center there, knew that there was going to be a growing population of students that became disengaged. They didn't log on for classes, whatever the case would be. So within 59 days, we started doing in-person home visits during the pandemic. The district couldn't do them because of liability issues. It was a virus. No one knew what was going on, and no one wanted to take the risk. So we never stopped our core service. And that's why we did almost like 75,000 in-person home visits during the pandemic.
Dr. Heber, repeat that number one more time to my audience. I told my audience that, oh, you heard it at the outset, that it was an inordinate amount of home visit that you did. From just the pandemic alone, you have reached over a million students. I know that for a fact with the data. But how many just during that time frame?
75,000.
Unbelievable.
75,000.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. And, I mean, those are the things that came from that. And so it reaffirms, and I would even say this, and this is for me, right? And this is the example I gave. When we hit the pandemic and we had to scale down the people, I had to go back to what I knew, which was home visits. So to me, it's going back to the block. I was averaging 1,000 home visits a month, right? But it reaffirmed and it taught me the humility that was needed to do this work again. Because you grow and you lose sight of it. You're not knocking on doors every single day, whatever the case may be. The pandemic forced me to go back and literally start over again and knock on the doors and learn. So it was like me coming out of, like MJ coming out of retirement and going to the Wizards. Like he had to learn it. And that's what I took coming out of the pandemic. That no matter how big that you should get, like I'm a firm believer that the CEO now of Concentric, or the CEO 10 years from now, wherever the case may be, should be doing 50 to 100 home visits a month.
Absolutely, absolutely. And guess what?
How can you not embrace that grind and the grittiness and have credibility to move an organization if you haven't done the damn work?
Yeah. Yeah. And you know what, Dr. Ebert, that goes back to you and your time when you were a principal, how you with every single student used to, you know, go to family's house when you know that you haven't seen a student for 3 or 4 days. You would actually knock on their door, give them a call. Dr. Ebert, that's that mindset that, you know, us being instructional leaders, us being leaders of our buildings, we got to reach each and all, every single one of our students. And that was replicated, is still replicated within Concentric. Now that you want to be just a board member, I know you're going to be asking that question. How many visits have you did from Q1 to Q4? It better be up to 100.
So, but this was interesting. This was interesting. So going back to the point that you were talking about, like VC. So this is what I need to tell my audience or your audience. Realize when you take VC money, they have your replacement. Like they don't want you as CEO. So I need you to know that they're gonna gas you up that you're the best thing since sliced bread, knowing that they have your replacement.
They do.
Right?
Preach.
They don't think that you can do with their money what you created without their money.
Preach.
And they're going to bring in the classically trained people, whether it's from UPenn, Northwestern, Drexel, whatever, Georgetown Business School, wherever the case may be. And those people aren't hungry.
Right. And here's the thing, Dr. Hebert, too. You know, there's a couple of companies that I know that are education focused, but they're bringing in these CEOs, these really trained business operators that all they care about is, and we're being real on this episode. All they care about, what are the profit margins? What's the actual net growth? What are our metrics for Q1, Q2? What is the percentage of lead gen to the pipeline? And what's that conversion rate over time? They're not knocking on doors, Dr. Hebert.
Brother, I didn't know what pipeline was. So I'm going to get up. I didn't know. Listen, I'm going to get this. This is a true story. So I can't mention names, right? But this is the person that that you and I know, same space and stuff like that, right? So I didn't even know what the chief revenue officer was. I'm like, what the hell is this, right? So the VC was like, you have to hire a chief revenue officer. I was like, okay, what do they do? They help you get contracts. Okay, perfect, right? So they come up with all these strategies, right? And I'm like, well, how do you sell something that you've never done, meaning the service or the product? I said, how can you talk about home business? You never knock on one damn door, right? So already there was tension there, right? I could have handled it differently. So this is a lesson in professional learning, what not to do, CEOs, right? So at one point, like, I built the company. It wasn't just one door at a time. It was one school at a time. Because as a Black business, you don't get $5, $10 million contracts. You got to take $5,000, $10,000, $15,000, prove yourself 20 times over. And then if you're in the barbershop long enough, you get a haircut. And then that's how I grew it.
Right? I love it.
That's how I grew it. Right? I didn't come in there win RFPs and stuff like that. They were like, I had to prove myself every single day, school by school. So I went to my chief revenue officer at the time. And I'm like, man, look, you're not hungry. And my chief of staff, Michael, who was writing the book with me, he's in there with us. And I start going off on my diatribe, cursing and stuff like that. So Michael was eating a slice of pizza. And I threw it on the ground and I start eating it off the ground. I said, that's how hungry you got to be. Now, you know what I mean?
We run through a wall for that, Doc.
Right. Now, you know what I mean? In retrospect, you know, you might have some HR problems and stuff like that, but when you just wasn't thinking about it, right? But I was like, you're not hungry. So I'm going to eat off the ground. I'm going to show you. Because that's how hungry you got to be.
That's the grind. And that's the grind, Doc, that, you know, people don't realize, right? And one thing I'll never, and I think you told me this, not last year, but the year before, I don't know if we were at NAPSE or TAPSE, you told me, Mike, don't lose your hunger because you can easily lose it once you start going up, that kind of that trajectory going up, you can start to lose the vision, start to lose to being hungry. You said to me, exactly, stay hungry as if it was your first contract. Never forget you said that to me.
And you gotta be like that, bro, in the sense, and I was guilty of it, right? Because if it takes a level of dysfunction, insanity, dysfunctionality, and trauma to do this work that we're doing and entrepreneurs doing, right? You gotta be so either disillusioned or so self-confident. And sometimes those things blend together because you're told no 99% of the time. And not just that, you're not just told no by people that you would expect to tell you no. You're played by the brothers and sisters who smile in your face, who want you to take them out to dinner, and who want you to order them drinks that they wouldn't buy them themselves. Like you go out to dinner with them. You're like, you don't drink that type of scotch. You drink Macallan 12. You're not at 18, 21, unless I take you out to drink. Come on, like, you know what I mean? Or they're ordering a la carte sides to go. You know what I mean? Taking something home for their significant and stuff like that. Like, you know, you wouldn't do that on your own bill, right? And like that is one of the things that I learned. Now I get it. There's different constraints, right? But there are brothers and sisters, and this is why, you know what I mean, I've had to kind of really readjust my expectations, is that I've been more disappointed by our brothers and sisters who are in leadership and decision-making capacities than I have by white people. I've expected to know from white people, but from brothers and sisters who are comfortable as long as they've made it and not willing to sacrifice it. And then that's why I created Bieber.
Yeah, and Doc, I wanted to get into that, right? Because when you launched, and what Bieber is the Black Educational Business Alliance, there was a big at the 53rd annual NAPSE conference. Dr. Hebert made a huge announcement. I believe there was roughly over, 500, 600 at that announcement. And then at the big, you know, it was remarkable. And I had learned about it before Doc and I had talked about it. And I said, this is needed, because Doc, at the outset of today's show, Doc had alluded to that, right? The actual percentiles or the percentage of Black business owners, right? We're talking about maybe 3% within that. But Doc, here's the thing, the underpinning metric within that, you know, within that 3%, most of them are represented by Black women, which is great, you know, in the ecosystem. But what are the goals of the Black Educational Business Alliance? One, and two, we got many listeners listening, Dr. Hebert. How can they get involved? Because there's a lot of Black business owners, I should say, African-American men and women that want to make that transition, but they're scared because they hear about Black businesses. They hear about how we have to go the extra mile to get that 10, 15, 20,000 contract 20 times over before we start getting the $100,000, $200,000 contracts. But how is this going to be able to be a level set and an affinity group for Black entrepreneurs and Black business owners?
Yeah, so I created Bieber because it's exactly what you talked about, is that there is this space out there, and a lot of times we're just navigating on ourselves and by ourselves in isolation, and you can't build movement like that. I was specifically developed Bieber and launched it at NAPSE in Chicago because it was the same idea that drove NAPSE. Like, a lot of times we're a part of NAPSE, and NAPSE is this amazing institution that we all need to support. But when you talk to the people, and right now there's 4 founding members still alive, and I spent a significant amount of time with Dr. Russell Jackson, one of the founding members, and he spoke to me, went to Chicago, visited him, spent the day with him, and he just poured into those knowledge gaps that I had about, even when they got together in that hotel room over the weekend, that there were 3 kind of factions that they didn't trust each other. They felt like they were meeting in secrecy, and in many ways they were. It wasn't until they all went out that Friday night to a restaurant and got some ribs, and Dick Gregory was there, the late comedian, and bought them some rounds and stuff like that, that it broke them out of their silos. And then they came back with the intentionality of what can this become? And what, 53 years later, we got this. Now, the thought with Bieber is, how can we collectively get this knowledge base of all these shared experiences? That's one thing. The second thing is, how can we partner with each other? One of the things I've learned painfully over the years is that we have not been as intentional as we could be as Black business owners. That if I know that a Black business is doing good work, whether it's your organization, whether it's Marlins at 21st Century Air, whether it's Kwame, whether it's Angela, whatever the case may be, and I may be in a room talking with superintendents or principals about chronic absenteeism, but as I'm hearing other needs that come up, we need to be able to be very intentional that we could connect those principals and those leaders in real time with people who are doing that work, other Black leaders. We just don't do that. We just say, no, that's not what I do, and we walk out, as opposed to intentionally creating that space. So now how can we get this cadre of Black business owners that have multiple types of services that actually interact with each other and partner with each other, right? So that's number two. So the space and the opportunity to build that camaraderie and that being intentional. Two, how do we align and identify all the different businesses and opportunities and products and services that we have? And then the larger down the line is, as we grow, and this is, I'm taking Biba's business model so that people don't think that that is my idea. I'm taking it from the Gordy Foundation, right? So if people don't know how Motown was founded, Barry borrowed $800 from his family's foundation to get a loan to start Motown. So they had a foundation. Yeah, they had a foundation, right? Where anybody a part of the family could pitch an idea to the family members, but the family members were on the board, right? The family members then would make a vote. So say, for example, you asked for $1,500. In fact, that's what he did ask for. He asked for $1,500. They came back and said, we don't think the business plan is strong enough, but we're going to give you $800. So they started with $800. And then what he did was, the interest was lower. So he paid back, I think, $900. I might be off. $900 or $1,000 on the $800 loan. But what he was doing is he was paying himself back because he was a part of the foundation. So he could always go back and get the loan. Speed to our generation, Wu-Tang Clan did the same thing with RZA. So if you look at the Wu-Tang Clan, I'm dating myself, right? But I was in high school when Wu-Tang came out. Look at what they did. They all had different styles, whether it was RZA from producing, Method Man, Inspector Deck, ODB, Raekwon, Ghostface, whatever case may be, right? And what he did was, they were very intentional. So Wu-Tang was signed to a record label, right? So then the easiest thing would have been is if individual members would have put out records on the same record label. RZA said no. What we're going to do is we're going to go to different record labels and they're going to put out our solo projects. So Def Jam put out Method Man, right? But a portion of what Method Man made went back to the collective. So that is why you look now with the Wu-Tang, none of them are bankrupt because they all had successful solo, but they were paying themselves back because they were paying the collaborative. So what I want to do with Biba is that we, the founding members, because everybody wants to look from outside until something's successful. No, you got to pay in to get in, right? But what that's going to do is it's going to give you exclusivity, right? Because you're a founding member. But then what will happen is, say, for example, Redemption gets a $200,000 contract. 5% of my contract may go right back into Biba. Right, whatever that, or 7%, whatever the case may be. But then what happens is, if I come into a challenge, most of us have payroll challenges, collecting on our AR, right? We can go to Biba and get a bridge loan as opposed to having to go to VC. So Biba becomes this entity that we fund ourselves and pay back ourselves.
Genius. Genius.
That's the long-term vision. Therefore, we never have to go ask people for money.
Genius. Dr. Heber, genius. In about 10 years, I'm saying this right now, in about 10 years from the concept, the thought, the best practice that's rooted in it, business model adaptation, wow, a lot of Black businesses are going to be leaning on you. You are going to essentially, if I'm hearing this correctly, and I don't want to, you know, put any misnomers out there, you're basically creating the Black VC for Black companies. Wow, Doc, that's genius.
Yeah, man. Because I've seen too many people struggle. I've seen too many people struggle, man, about trying to get a loan, trying to figure out how to make payroll, wherever the case may be. If we all collectively sacrificed, we all would collectively win.
Unbelievable, Doc. Doc, I tell you, to my audience, this is, I mean, if you think about this and looking at this, right, from a Black business entrepreneur, from the lens of being a Black-owned company where only 3%, there's 3% of us in this ecosystem, and only 1%, Dr. Hebert, 1%, as you stated, actually get that type of angel money, angel investors to my VFE audience, and then also venture capitalists, right? Because we go in, we talk about, you know, the impact, right? When we make these pitches to the VC, but the VC are asking about specific segments within your business plan. And trust me, to my audience, the business plan and the strategic operating plan, different. Right. School improvement plan. We're not talking about, you know, the SIPs or the SOPs. A business plan. I was like, okay, hold on. I got to put some attention in designing this. But Doc, this actually might save a lot of Black businesses, Black owned startups and companies with that. Thank you for that. Thank you. That actually comes about. And then when I heard this at NAPSE, I said to myself, yes, long overdue. And of course, it'll come from you. But Doc, last question. I'm going to try to limit you to 3 words. I know I won't be able to, but like I tell everybody, take it as it is. What 3 words do you want today's audience to leave our podcast with regarding hope, trust, and resiliency, and what I'm calling this AC stage of education, which means after COVID-19?
Sacrifice, commitment, and grace.
Please elaborate on all three.
So the sacrifice has got to be collective. You got to be able to do this work for a purpose bigger than yourself. And when those times get rough, and they are rough, you've got to be able to be willing to sacrifice and for something bigger than yourself. And what that means is that, you know, it's not giving to me is easy. I mean, if you go in your closet and you look at all the stuff that you may have and you give something you haven't worn in a year, but are you willing to go without for something or someone bigger than yourself, whether that be organizationally, whether it be for the people and the students that you're servicing or whatever the case may be? You got to be able to do that, you know, and having the people who are willing to tolerate that you don't need an 80% profit margin. Sometimes you can do the same exact thing for 60% and it's okay. Right. So I think that's really important. I think as it comes to grace, is it's okay not to know. You have to have grace with yourself. Yeah, it's okay. It's okay not to know, not to have all the answers, and say that you need help. Lean on each other. There are good brothers and sisters out there that are willing to help you, that you can lean on, that you can, your shoulder could be a shoulder that you can cry on. Yeah. Oh, you gotta be 10 tones down. You gotta be 10 tones down, 100%. The commitment to this, and this is probably why it was time for me to transition. For my older kids, I sacrificed being a father, and for my ex-wife, I sacrificed being a husband. For my fiance now, and for my younger kids now, Princeton and Naya, I'm not willing to sacrifice that. The business needs the commitment. The business needs that commitment if you're going to get the results.
Absolutely. One of the best business minds I engage with. I just love speaking to Dr. Hebert all the time, because I tell you this to my audience, you know, there was a lot of bumps and bruises, right? Starting this thing up with Agile Evolutionary Group and now AEG Systems, Doc, as you know, the new EdTech division within Agile Evolutionary Group. But I'll never forget that one thing. You were like, Mike, stay hungry like you got your first contract. Dr. Hebert, thank you for coming on VFE. Now, I know there's going to be a myriad education stakeholders, throughout the ecosystem, whether it be principals, superintendents, with the work of Concentric, whether it be early startups or early founders, entrepreneurs, Black entrepreneurs out there that just need that simple mentoring from you, right? That simple grace, right? Because sometimes we don't give grace on ourselves. How will they be able to reach you?
So all you can go to my website, you can go to Concentric's website, which is just concentriced.org. The message will get to me. Directly, you can go to redemptionsocialsolutions.com. That's my new website. Or the best way, and this is kind of old fashioned, it's just been the same way for 18 years, just call me, 202-330-1753. If I don't answer, text me, because everybody, I get all these spams now. I hit in with numbers. They're not 1-800 numbers no more. So yeah, I mean, that's the best way. One of the things I never want to lose is that, you know, we talk about Rudolph Kipling, you learned it when you played, about if. Just walk with kings, but don't lose the common touch.
Absolutely. If, one of my favorite poems, man, and Invictus, man, I tell you, out of the night that covers me,
Black as a pit from pole to pole.
Definitely got to have an unconquerable soul in this world. So, but thank you so much for coming on VFB. I'm going to see you soon. I know that coming up where we're going to be at Tapsy together. It's just always a pleasure to talk to you, brother.
God bless, brother. I appreciate you, bro.
Appreciate you. And on that note, onward and upward, everybody. Have a great evening.